Good morning, I'm Sheila Cast. We're on the record.
I remember the day the letter from G-Pep slid under the prison cell door. It was like a paper airplane landing on a worn and tattered, off-traveled, gray and red speckled runway. It was an 8-foot by 10-foot matte gray concrete cage with names scratched into the paint followed by two-digit numbers like 99, 94, and 2000. Later, I would scratch never again.
That is an alumnus of GPEP, the Goucher Prison Education Partnership, William Freeman, speaking at the commencement ceremony for Goucher College's 2020 class. Since 2012, the Goucher Prison Education Partnership has taught subjects like Latin American history, Shakespeare, calculus, public speaking, and more to men and women at two Maryland prisons. The vast majority of people in prison return home. What difference do these classes make in their lives after incarceration? We'll hear more from William Freeman in a bit, but first, Eliza Cornejo is Executive Director of the Goucher Prison Education Partnership. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you for having me, Sheila.
Through Goucher, volunteer instructors teach college preparatory classes and 4-credit courses at Maryland Correctional Institution Jessup and the Maryland Correctional Institution for Women. What does it take to be admitted to the program?
Students who are admitted to Goucher through the Goucher Prison Education Partnership, or GPEP, go through a rigorous admissions process. There is information sessions that they come to, followed by interviews, an essay, a written application. They bring a detailed calendar of their every moment that they will spend during their week of in class, studying, meeting with their professors, meeting with tutors, and factoring into that also working a full-time schedule and any other activities such as leading religious groups or participating in groups or clubs in the prison. So students have a very, very busy schedule. So part of the admissions process is showing that they have time and the dedication and the motivation to engage in really rigorous college courses and curriculum on top of an already very busy schedule. In this process, we're looking for students who are ready to engage in this work and make the very most of this opportunity. So once a student has been admitted to Goucher based on all of those other factors we're looking at, then we look at their placement exams. And we know that many students who don't remember Algebra 2 very well because it's been 20 years since they've taken Algebra 2, or their education had many gaps, that those individuals are still capable, bright, ready to engage in this challenging academic work with the right resources. So for those students, we provide non-credit math and college preparatory writing courses to get them up to the level that they need to be academically to succeed in Goucher's rigorous credit courses.
How long are most people in the program once they get in?
We look for students who are planning and to be at MCIJ or MCIW for at least 2 semesters so that they can really engage in the curriculum. Most students are enrolled for much longer than that, anywhere from a couple years to 8 years or more. And they either finish their degree while they are inside. We've had a few students graduate recently. We had our first graduation inside the prison this May, which was a really exciting event.
How many students so far have completed a degree?
25 degrees have been earned by former GPEP students, either inside earning a bachelor's degree in American Studies from Goucher College, or completing their degree on Goucher's main campus after release, or completing their degree at any number of schools around the country, in Florida, North Carolina, Nevada, Washington State, and schools all over Maryland.
That's Eliza Cornejo, who leads the Goucher Prison Education Partnership, on the record on WIPR. I'm Sheila Cast. GPEP offers college courses to men and women at 2 Maryland prisons. Were classes able to continue during the pandemic?
Yes. And like all organizations, GPEP has really grappled with the COVID pandemic, of course, but we're extremely proud to have sustained course delivery and student engagement every single semester during the pandemic, when delivery methods had to be adapted almost constantly to meet ever-evolving COVID protocols and regulations. And we did this by adhering to our North Star, which is our mission to offer an excellent college education to students in prison. And GPEP was actually one of only two institutions of higher learning to continue classes in Maryland prisons throughout the pandemic. And we were the only group that was able to continue inside the prisons for most of the pandemic, meaning when students had limited or no in-person family visits, religious meetings, AA or NA meetings, or dog training programs or knitting club, they still had college. And this past year, we offered 31 classes to 134 students while navigating, again, the latest iterations of the COVID-19 pandemic. And we're so grateful to all of the partners who made this work possible, particularly at this really challenging time.
A study by Yale and the Bard Prison Initiative found that students who participated in college and prison programs were 38% less likely than their peers to be arrested for another crime. And the more classes a student took, the lower the risk of recidivism. Does Goucher track this type of data?
So we don't track it separately from the data that you just described, but I would say our students track very well with following that data. I will also say tracking recidivism is good, right? We want individuals, whether they're students or not, coming home from prison to stay home and not go to prison again. When I think about tracking recidivism, I think we're looking at the very, very lowest bar, right? We're saying the best way that we're going to track these individuals' success is by seeing if they go back to prison or not. Whereas there's other communities where we're tracking their success by, did they go to Harvard or Yale? Did they get a good job? And that we should be using those same measures of success for individuals coming home from prison. So yes, we're hoping that the recidivism rates are going to be dropping, and we see that happening for our students and for others enrolled in similar programs. And we also see our alumni far exceeding that very low bar and supporting their families, meeting their own dreams and their goals, making their communities safer and better places, and supporting others who are coming home and really reaching the highest level of success.
Eliza Cornejo is executive director of the Goucher Prison Education Partnership. We need to take a short break on the record. When we're back, from prison to pursuing a master's degree. I'm Sheila Cass. Stay with us.
I'm Al Waller.
I'm Catherine Collinson.
And I'm Mihaela Vince.
In upcoming episodes of Clear Path, Your Roadmap for Life, we'll discuss ways to catch up on retirement savings and the importance of self-care. Tune in to WIPR's website and mobile app, all major podcast platforms, and transamericainstitute.org.
Welcome back to On the Record. I'm Sheila Cast. What doors can a college education open for someone returning from prison? 2 years ago, Congress lifted a ban that prevented students in prison from receiving federal financial aid. The nonprofit Vera Institute for Justice estimates that more than 750,000 people in prison will be eligible for Pell Grants when access is fully reinstated next year. The Goucher Prison Education Partnership has offered college courses to students at two Maryland prisons since 2012. I'm speaking with Executive Director Eliza Cornejo, and joining us now is William Freeman, a Bloomberg American Health Initiative Fellow at Johns Hopkins University. He is the first Goucher Prison Education Partnership graduate to pursue a master's degree. He's also manager of the Higher Education Justice Initiative at the Education Trust, a nonprofit that works to close the achievement gap. Welcome, William.
Thank you for having me.
You spent nearly 21 years in prison and earned more than 70 transferable college credits while you were behind bars. What prompted you to do that, to pursue your education?
Well, largely it was the lack of opportunities in prison to do other things. So when I had an opportunity to do college, it was a no-brainer. in the sense that, one, I had the time, and two, there were other individuals who were in close proximity to me that I could witness on any day studying in small groups. Because there was a cohort before the one I actually joined. And I used to just see the level of intent and purpose that they seemed to have with the material and with one another, and I wanted it.
And how would you characterize what your educational experiences had been before prison?
So I did manage to graduate high school. However, starting from the eighth grade until the 12th, I was suspended from school at least twice every year. And in my senior year, I was expelled from school and had to attend night school classes and adult learning in order to walk with the graduating class. However, even after graduating, I found it problematic to find scores for tests that we didn't take. I didn't take the Maryland Functional Math Test and a couple other standardized tests that most students take. However, I was receiving a diploma.
Huh. Eliza, after students leave prison, what then? Do you stay connected with your students?
We do. So once students return home, it's up to them whether they stay in contact with us. Some students very understandably choose to leave every memory of prison behind and not reach out to us, which is a choice that we respect. But for students who do reach out to us, we are a support system. We are not just some random classes that we offer inside and then that's it. We are here for lifelong learners. I hope that William continues to go on and get his PhD after he gets his master's, and he will always, whether he's at Goucher or Hopkins or another school, he will always be a Goucher student. And that is true of all of our alumni. So we meet students where they are. If they're interested in re-enrolling in school, we're there to support them in applications and filling out, you know, all of the paperwork that can be really overwhelming and cumbersome. And for students who have experience with the criminal justice system, not only applying to jobs, but applying to school is much more complicated. There's many more hoops to jump through. So we're here to, students drive that process. They are the ones running that train, but we're here with them to support them in through that process and make sure that they are reaching their own goals, whatever those goals may be.
William, it's been just about 4 years since you were released from prison. What were some of the challenges you faced while establishing your life after prison?
Well, initially, so I couldn't pass a background check for employment. So that was the first thing that hit me prior to even worrying about housing, because I was released to a transitional house. And I couldn't find employment at areas in food service or even Amazon, Uber, Lyft. I couldn't pass the background check. So I couldn't, you know, get my life on track. In addition to that, at a personal level, I had inherited my mom, who was stage 4 kidney cancer at the time, and she was nearing being completely stuck to the bed, like could not get out of the bed. So not being able to, one, support her because I was unable to get a job, and I was able to live with her, so I slept on her couch. She had a 1-bedroom condo, and those were the initial challenges I faced day 2 out of prison.
How did you solve the can't pass the background check, can't get a job problem?
Well, one of the things that I had learned in prison through using the chain of command and the grievance process was that there was somebody who I needed to be talking to. And when I was released, I went to a local neighborhood organization, a grassroots organization on the east side of Baltimore called Out for Justice. The executive director there is Nicole Hansen Mundell. And Nicole, what she does is works with formerly incarcerated or system impacted people to get them abreast with the legislative process. So I started going to Annapolis with Out for Justice and giving testimony around some of these struggles, around criminal background checks and around the lack of diminution credit for violent offenders in prison. And they were my initial pushes that I was making. And I realized that there was a small earnings to be made with my story. So I would get paid $40, $60, a few $100 sometimes to go places and share my story, most times with people who had not had to live the life I had. And Nicole was able to get a very small grant and bring me on as a contractor and I began to lead the research committee. Out for Justice would come up with about a dozen or so policies that they wanted to look at in the upcoming legislative year. And I would lead the committee of formerly incarcerated and system impacted men and women to discern which ones we thought deserved the most importance. Because oftentimes we could only take one between three and five pieces of legislation to the table. So right out the gate, and that literally was $40 a day was where I started.
This is On the Record. I'm Sheila Cast, speaking with William Freeman, an alumnus of the Goucher Prison Education Partnership. He's now pursuing a master's degree in public health from Johns Hopkins University, and with Eliza Cornejo, executive director of the partnership. William, you were released from prison in 2018 and continued your education on Goucher's main campus. In 2020, you earned your bachelor's degree in sociology and anthropology. What did it feel like to be on campus?
So to be clear, I was released from prison in 2018 to a drug program that was I was not allowed to operate outside of that program. So actually, I was released from all institutions on February 5th, 2019. But I was able to come to the main campus, and my initial response was right in line with W.E.B. Du Bois's double consciousness, right? So I felt like individuals, professors, other students knew where I was coming from. And because of that, I had to manage how tall I am, because I'm on the tall side. I'm 6'3" tall, and I have some weight on me. I'm about 240 pounds. And so I was managing that more than I was trying to learn how to navigate a college campus, was my presentation itself. It overwhelmed me so much so that there were a few times early on where I almost made a decision to walk away. And it wasn't until a classmate, a traditional college student classmate of mine named Claire Corliss, who decided to take me up as a help buddy or an accountability partner. Claire would meet me at my classrooms and help me get to the next class. Although I knew which direction to travel, I really felt isolated in the beginning. And as I began to mingle with Claire and other folks, slowly but surely, I started to find my way. And then, it showed, because initially I struggled to, deliver on task as I had done so in prison. Like, you know, professors that I had taken while incarcerated were seeing my work early on, and they were asking me questions, you know, is it okay? Are you okay? So on one level, I had the personal piece at home with my mom dying and me becoming her primary caregiver before I was even in a position to properly provide for myself. And then on campus, I struggled with fitting in. I'm a Black guy and an older guy. I'm a non-traditional student. And folks had associated me very early from hanging around the Goucher Prison Education Partnership offices with that program. So it was quite evident where I was coming from. Thank you to Claire for taking me on. She didn't ask me either. She just started waiting on me and walking with me. And she did that to some ridicule from her friends, and then even some rumors circulated. But it was tough early on. We worked through it, and she and I both graduated.
Let me shift gears a bit. In 1994, Congress barred people in prison from receiving Pell Grants, federal need-based financial aid to pay for college. That decision was reversed by Congress in 2020. At the time, Goucher was already participating in an experimental Pell Grant pilot program started in 2015 by the U.S. Department of Education. Eliza, how much of Goucher's costs do Pell Grants cover?
Pell Grants cover about 20 to 25% of GPEP's operating costs each year, which is, of course, a huge support for our programming and also is not the bulk of our funding. So the remaining 75 to 80% of GPEP's operating costs come through generous philanthropic support, either through private grants that GPEP staff apply to or by individual donations. So when we think about the expansion of Pell Grants, it's wonderful to have additional support for education in prisons across the country. and a reminder to other institutions of higher learning who are interested in getting into this field is that Pell Grants are a support, but they're never going to be, this work is never going to be a revenue generator for colleges if it's done the right way. If GPEP was relying solely on Pell Grants, we would have to fire 80% of our staff, cut 80% of our programming, but maintain the same number of coursework, of course credits that we offer each semester, meaning the meaningfulness, the rigorousness, the depth of learning and discussion and real active participation in classes between students and professors and between students themselves would be greatly reduced.
William, what difference do you think this change, making Pell Grants available to students in prison, will have on the landscape of prison education in America?
I think that it's a two-sided coin here. On one side, we certainly, as I described as watching other GPEP students prior to my enrollment in the program and how I thirst for it, I think that there's a great demand for it in prison. Like, individuals want to know different things. They know that they need to know something different and have something to leverage against their past behaviors or past doings. On the other hand, because I'm involved in this work, I'm also frontline and witnessing the growing conversation around enhancing technology, which could also mean, shrinking the footprint in terms of human to human teaching. Like, GPEP is 100% taught by professors who are alive, breathing, who go through random searches and metal detectors to enter the institution in order to deliver us an education that I think is unmatched by many programs simply based on that, because so much of our learning was based off of us being able to see the role enactment of this professional carrying a discourse. We would leave classrooms and mimic professors in the yard and on the walkways to lunch and dinner. We would use phrases like unpack. We need to unpack that piece. Or what do you think about that? How about the counter argument? Those things were based in part off of the curriculum, but primarily due to the human to human contact. So I think so long as people are seeking to look for hybrid ways to include technology without erasing the human connection, that this will have a great effect on, as a whole, on how individuals even see themselves, right? Because it's that information that allowed for us to see ourselves, not just as people who had done something wrong and were paying our debt for it, but also as people who could carry information and that couldn't be taken from us in times where we didn't have much to our possession.
And now you're working on a master's degree in public health at Johns Hopkins. Where do you see that degree taking you?
So my interest with public health and why I chose public health is also very much connected to my crime prior to prison. And so I want to study local neighborhood intimate gun violence at the level of friend to friend and even family member to family member, and say that the larger majority of, and this is my hypothesis, is that the greater majority of violence is more personal than it is stranger on stranger. And so I hope that this allows me to, one, write a quantitative article about this piece and get interest stirring around focusing, like narrowing the way we look at crime in the inner cities, or even in some areas like St. Louis, it's the reverse. It's the suburbs where the violence is centered. So I wanna center that in the conversation, much like Pell and higher education have become very centered in the way people think about criminal legal system reform, right? So I hope that it leads to that kind of attention.
I'm grateful to you both for speaking with me. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Eliza Cornejo is executive director of the Goucher Prison Education Partnership. William Freeman is the first graduate of the partnership to pursue a master's degree. He's a Bloomberg Fellow at Johns Hopkins University. We have links to more information and to William Freeman's Class of 2020 commencement speech at the On the Record page at wypr.org. I'm Sheila Cass. Glad you're with us on the record. Come back tomorrow.